If we can't get something to grow, then we usually admit it. And, you know, I think that's important that you are honest, because people will have things at home that don't work. And I think if you say, well, you know, we're supposed to be the professionals, we tried this and it didn't work.
Hi, I'm Kate.
And I'm Phil.
And this is The Underground, the podcast for garden sector professionals. Each week, we discover the trailblazers and innovators who are shaping the future of garden care in the UK. So, without further ado, let's get down and dirty.
On this week's show, Kate and I caught up with Scott Smith, the former head gardener at BBC Scotland's Beechgrove Garden. Scott has also worked as the head gardener at two prestigious National Trust for Scotland properties, Haddo House and Pitmedden Garden. Scott has just started a new role at the Mayen Estate in the heart of the Deveron Valley in Aberdeenshire, where he'll be using his skills as a horticulturalist trained in heritage gardening. For context, this interview was actually recorded back at the start of February prior to Scott's recent job change, but we've only now been able to schedule it. Our conversation with Scott is wide-ranging and covers mental health issues that can affect people working in horticulture. During this discussion, Scott is very open and honest about his experiences in the past, touching on topics of depression and suicide. But we also discuss his role within the Beechgrove Garden, as well as horticulture in general. Scott, welcome to The Underground.
Well, hello, first of all. Nice to be here. Thank you for inviting me on. Lovely to meet you, Kate and Phil.
Hi.
And to you.
I actually didn't think this was about garden. It was The Underground. I thought it was about street racing. So I'm a little bit underprepared for this. No.
So Scott, just want to ask you, a bit like myself, horticulture was not your first choice in career. Now, I'm quite interested in that in two reasons. Obviously, why? Why have you decided to become a gardener? But also, why do you think it is that people don't take it up as their first choice in kind of profession as well?
Well, my story, as you say, Kate, everybody has different origins and beginnings, and I didn't really know what I wanted to do. So when I left school, I went to a few open days at universities, and there was ethical hacking and countermeasures, which is cybersecurity in Abertay Dundee. And I thought, that sounds cool. So I went with that and I hated it. As I say, it was indoors, dark, musty rooms, you know, a lot of fat, sweaty guys in trench coats thinking it's like, you know, coding in the Matrix. And it wasn't my natural environment. I did not enjoy it at all. So I left and just took the first job I could get, went to the job center, just said, I'll do anything. What have you got? And the first job they had happened to be a seasonal gardener at Kelly Castle in Fife, just near my house, for the National Trust for Scotland. And I thought, well, whatever, it's a job, you know. So I applied for it and I got called for an interview and I went in. I met Mark and Andy, who were lovely. Andy gave me a tour of the garden, and it was fascinating. It was a lovely garden. You know, it was a 19th century arts and crafts garden with loads of organic principles and fruit and vegetable growing. And, you know, we're talking all the hazel hurdles for growing your runner beans up and all that romantic, lovely stuff. You know, the stuff you see in magazines.
Oh, lovely.
And I didn't know... You know, I didn't know squit about gardening, really. So I was just walking around going like, yeah, this looks nice. And then I went in for the interview, top floor of the castle, out of breath by the time I got into the interview room. And there in front of me, six vases of different flowers. And they went, well, Andy's actually told you what all these are walking around if you were paying attention. So I was like a deer in the headlight and I had to go, don't know that one, don't know that one, don't know that one, don't know that one. Don't know that one. No, sorry, I don't know that one either. So I thought, well, I've not got this job. And I've surprisingly got a phone call on the Monday morning saying the job's yours if you want it. And I was like,
wow.
Really? Are you sure?
No way.
Goodness me. What were the other applicants like?
Well, that was it. Apparently there was 12 applicants. It was only myself and one other person that filled in the form correctly. And when it came to interview, the other person didn't show up. So I won the job by being there.
Oh, well, there you go.
So I went in there, and at first I did think it was just a job. It was a job and it was a way to get money, but I fell in love with it very fast. You know, about a month in, it was just brilliant. You know, I looked forward to getting up. I looked forward to going to work. I would come home at night and I would be knackered and you'd sleep better. You know, you're out in fresh air all day, and obviously the sunlight helps with your circadian rhythms. And, you know, it's there's so much to know and learn. And my boss made it super interesting. You know, every day was fun. We had a great laugh. And, you know, he could always tell you all these facts about all the different things. And
Oh, sounds brilliant.
Yeah, they did have a student gardener who was doing their plant identifications every week. And I says, I would like to join in with that as well. And, you know, when you first start trying to learn Latin, it's very alien. Oh, and it's hard to get into. But once you get into the swing of it, it starts to become second nature. So, you know, I was forcing myself to learn the plants. And in the beginning, I've had people ask, how do you learn the plant names? Because I use mnemonic devices when I first began. I would say, you know, if we had red hot pokers, it's Nephophia. So I would think of, sounds like Hoff, like David Hasselhoff running about in his red Speedos. So that's how I remembered it. You know, and it's just little things that you can do to make it memorable.
I'm never going to look at a red hot poker the same way now.
Yeah, now you'll just think of Baywatch. So,
can I just follow on from something you said there? I think it's amazing that you got the job, but what kind of really hits me is that when you said, you know, one person filled in the job application properly, one guy didn't show up for the interview. It really kind of horticulture or gardening, if you're Monty Don, let's not go there, seems to not be something that young people are kind of opened up to at all.
That is where we are struggling to get the next generation of horticulturalists in. It's because we are never told about it at school. When I was at school, I was at an academy. It's all about academic league tables. It's all about how many kids they can get through exams and get them into universities. And majority of universities don't really do horticulture as a course per se. So, you know, I was never ever told once, so you could be a gardener. To be honest, it was seen as, you know, a less academic career path. If you were not academic, you could maybe go to college if you had to and go and do greenkeeping or hairdressing or, you know, learn a trade. A trade was almost a dirty word. Whereas I know now a lot of people who have been to university, who have got degrees and have got a so-so job or whatever, middle management type. And I know people who ended up leaving school at 16 to become a plumber. And they get double the wages, you know, because the world's our oyster. They're in demand. People need them, and not a lot of people have a skill set.
Talking about jobs, you're now the head gardener at Beechgrove. Can you tell us how you got the gig? Did you like have to do a like screen test or anything, or was it purely on the fact that you're a horticulturalist and you know that was the first bit why they came to you?
So there was 12 applicants. Only one of them filled out the form right. No, I'm just kidding. No, it was a bit different this time. It was hard. Well, what happened, interestingly enough, is I was the head gardener for Pitmedden and Haddo, and we had just completed a £100,000 restoration project designed by Chris Beardshaw, who's a Chelsea Gold Medal winner. So because that was such a big project, unfortunately, it all took place over 2020, 21, a horrible time. It was a tricky one. So, you know, I got Chris Beardshaw's plans slapped on my desk and then just went, off you pop, Scott, get on with it. So I did, and we got it done. And we had the grand launch, and it happened to be, I think we invited a number of local people to the launch, obviously for publicity reasons, because, you know, they've spent £100,000, they want to milk it for all it's worth. So they got Gwyneth, who ran Turn TV, the Beechgrove Garden side. She came over and she went, this is fantastic, we have to film it for Beechgrove. And I said, yeah, anytime, you know, thinking next year or something like that. And then the next day I got a call saying, we'll be there next week. I was like, oh, right, okay.
Classic TV.
So, you know, I've never done television or anything like that, but I did not have a clue what to expect. And then on the filming day, you know, I busted my gut for a week to try and make that place look absolutely spotless. Poor staff as well, you know, it was just crack, 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 go, go, go. But we got there. I think we filmed for 5 hours, for about 4 minutes of footage. But it looked fantastic when it was on TV. It looked great on Beech Grove. You had all these lovely drone shots, and you know, Adam did a great job of directing me, and it seemed to go fairly well. That was about it. And then 2-3 months later, the job was advertised, and I thought, well, it's too good a chance to pass up to go for that. So I went for it, got an interview, and obviously they'd seen that I had some sort of presenting skill because of the segment I'd done before. And part of the interview was they said, would you be comfortable being on camera if you're needed? And I said, yeah, if you need me, happy to do it. It's not my aim. You know, I'm not applying to be a presenter. I'm applying to be the head gardener. But by all means, if you need me, happy to do it. So that was that. And then I did find out that we had something like 300 applicants. And 8 interviews on the same day as myself. I went first. And I was very pleased when the producer says, well, we had 7 people after you, but just nobody quite came up to your standard. So I thought, sweet.
Good. Why don't you tell us about how you're finding that experience at the Beech Grove Garden?
Fantastic. It's easily the best job I've ever had. I really enjoy it. What's very different about it is you just have to kind of change your mindset a bit about how you garden, because it's a 3-acre garden and you kind of almost have to think of it as a green studio. Yeah. And what you're doing ultimately is we have production meetings with the other presenters and all the production staff. And what we will do is we will sit and plan out maybe 6 to 8 episodes coming up. And, you know, we have so many minutes of television to fill. So we need to, everybody works as a team, everybody pitches ideas, everybody, you know, throws their hat in the ring, and we go with what seems good. And that way we start to pencil in each episode, and what it is all written down in a big planner and a big scheduler, and I have it on a spreadsheet. So I'll know when we're filming, I'll know who's presenting, I'll know what the rough aim is to be filmed. So it's up to me to facilitate having everything ready and organized for that, so that the filming day goes as smooth as possible. So I will know, say it's George and Carol, they're going to be putting tatties in bags. So I'll have all the bags ready. I'll have all the compost at one side. I'll have all the fertilizer. Perhaps I'll have half of them pre-filled and some of them empty so they could be seen to be putting some in on camera. Okay. I'll have the potatoes to one side. I'll have the labels all pre-written out. You know, right. I'll have the area that they're in looking pristine. That's maybe what's different. I find the most unusual thing to get used to is that when I was at Pitmed and Haddo, it's open to the public, so the entire place has to look pristine all the time. You've got paying visitors, so you had to have everything looking spick and span, whereas Beech Grove, I've got a bit of flexibility in that as long as the areas which I am going to be getting filmed look spot on, the other bits can take a little bit of a back seat, but it's then up to me when I've got a free moment to make sure I get round to those areas so that they don't get out of control, if you like.
Can I just ask, Scott, is it just you? Are you the sole gardener, or are there other gardeners that work under you?
I'm full time. And then I have 2 other gardeners who at the moment they do 1 day a week and the other one does 2 days a week. So it's quite a big garden and quite a lot to do for, you know, you assume TV there'll be 50 gardeners, but no, it's not the case at all. And it's the same with, I'm maybe going to be naughty here and bust a myth, but presenters come in and present, they don't garden. You know, they come in, they do their little bit. I mean, sometimes if they've got a project, they'll see their project through. You know, I think Kirsty and Brian were particularly good at that. They would come in and see their little piece all the way through, and Lizzie as well. But, you know, ultimately they are paid to be presenters and to share their knowledge. And presenting is an entirely different skill from gardening.
No. Well, I did work on Garden as well as a researcher, and I started off as a runner. And yeah, we would be the ones building most of the pond, you know, and then the presenter would come along, put the final brick down. And yeah, but certainly there was never a full-time gardener like the way you are. So yeah, but Beech Grove is so much more, I don't want to say real. Well, it is, isn't it? It's much slower than garden as well. It's much more how to garden. And I love it. And I know a lot of professionals watch Beech Grove, don't really watch Garden as well, because it has just got that lovely timeless quality. And you learn, you actually learn. That's one thing I love about Beech Grove. And obviously, you've got all this horticultural knowledge, so you must really get a chance to use that, would you say?
Yeah, absolutely. I really enjoy that element of it, because what I find okay, I'm maybe going to get myself in hot water here, but I feel like Gardener's World over the last few years has become sort of style over substance. It feels, you know, very put your feet up with a glass of wine and just chill out sort of thing. You know, it's quite dreamy, quite a lot of lovely camera work and floaty through borders. Yeah. And
aspirational,
that's the word. It's aspirational, whereas we're a bit more get your hands dirty, learn something, and get out there and try it. You know, we're maybe explaining why things are the way they are or how to do things a certain way. We're almost, yeah, in some ways, more of a teaching program. I like to explain things so that I think anybody could listen and understand. You know, you can throw in the big terms, you can throw in the horticultural scientific nitty gritty, but as long as you relate it back so that it's something that anybody could go like, okay, I get that, you know.
And that comes across, yeah, that really comes across well.
If we can't get something to grow, then we usually admit it. And that's another thing that I like we do. We say, well, we tried this and it didn't work.
Right.
You know, I think that's important that you are honest, because people will have things at home that don't work. And I think if you say, well, you know, we're supposed to be the professionals, we tried it, didn't work.
Absolutely.
You know, like we had this organic trial for delphiniums. We planted delphiniums for King Charles anniversary because it's his favorite plant. And, you know, we tried, we wanted organic methods for controlling it. So we had coffee grounds, we had grit, we had garlic spray. And before we could get any results, the rabbits came and ate it.
Oh, no. And so, that is real. That's what people, you know, have problems with themselves. So, no, that is brilliant. I genuinely love Beech Grove. I really, really do. And having worked on, as I said, Gardener's World, it's just, yeah, it's a world apart. And I know which one I'd rather be gardening in.
Yeah, well, we're starting back shortly. So we begin filming again at the end of March.
At the end of March, right.
And I'll be back on TV April. And of course, it's good now that it's back on BBC Two, so that there is an English viewership as well.
Yeah.
So we're back to being on BBC Two Friday nights just before Gardener's World.
Just before Gardener's World. Oh, great.
We're going to take a short break. But in the meantime, it's time for Kate's Corner, where we discover the musings and sage advice from the Gardener Guru. So, Kate, what are we going to be discussing this week?
Well, Phil, this week is the start of the Chelsea Flower Show, which I'm sure you're aware
of. Right.
And so absolutely. I'm not going to talk about the show, but I'm going to talk to you about the Chelsea Chop.
The Chelsea Chop?
Yes. So any idea what the Chelsea Chop is?
Is it a pork chop?
No. Excellent answer. So the Chelsea Chop is when people can cut back a lot of their perennials that flower in the summer to encourage much shorter, compact growth and put some more flowers. Now, it's quite scary to do this because a lot of your perennials are growing really well this time of year. And to cut them back just seems really, really scary, especially if you've got ones that are already flowering, like geums and geraniums. But for a lot of taller perennials, you cut them right back. Almost you can just get some shears and chop them. And then what happens is you get a lot more compact, bushier growth without them flopping over. And it's usually done late May, hence the name, the Chelsea Chop. It's not for the faint-hearted. If you are a bit scared, then just do maybe one third of the plant, because then that'll keep the flowering period over a longer time. It will delay flowering a little bit. But what you get is a much, much healthier plant. If I say the plant sedum to you, do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The old-fashioned ice plant, it's now called Heliotelephium, I think it's changed its name.
Okay.
And they are classic. They just flop over from the middle. But if you give it the Chelsea Chop, it won't do that. So it is a really good horticultural practice to do this time of year. Don't be scared. Get your shears out.
I think maybe giving it a go on just a third to begin with sounds like a plan for me, because it does sound a bit scary.
It is scary, but honestly, it's well worth it. You will reap the rewards.
Right. We'll give it a go.
Thanks, Phil.
Thank you, Kate. And back to the show.
I know lots of people think about, and your garden is a great therapy. You know, you can now get it socially prescribed and everybody talks about get out in the garden. It's so wonderful to be with nature. But in a bit like yourself as well, a lot of the time, a lot of gardeners actually work on their own. And especially in the winter when it is, you know, the weather can really go against you. You don't see another soul. It can affect you. And when you're not on great wages as well, you know, mental health is an issue within horticulture. I know you have talked about this. So would you mind sharing some of your experiences about how you've coped?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm very open and honest about my mental health, and I am an advocate of mental health awareness. I personally have been through various bouts of depression, still under medication for it, still get therapy for it. And I find gardening is a fantastic outlet for it. So, you know, I will be completely open and honest and frank, just so if anybody out there is listening, they know they're not alone. You know, I have attempted suicide myself. I survived, thankfully. I have been in a position times before where I was self-harming. You know, I've had a lot of mental health issues and problems myself. And I feel like it's good to talk about it and it's good to be open. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I am an advocate for it because no matter how bad things get, you can get through it and you can push on.
Absolutely.
And I'd like to think that I'm, you know, maybe somebody that can show that. You know, I've had a lot of troubles and hardship with mental health issues. It runs in the family, you know, my brother and my sister and my mom, and they've all had depression, they've all had problems. So gardening is a fantastic outlet and a fantastic way to help boost your mental health. I think it's very important that you get outside, mm-hmm. you get fresh air, you get sunlight, you know, you get that vitamin D, you help get your brain in order. Like I say, you know, it's important that you sleep properly, and it's important that if you feel down that you talk to someone about it and you get help. And even if you can't afford a therapist, therapy is a fantastic thing. I think everybody should do therapy. You know, it's such a great way to really unlock things that you don't even think that you got going on.
Yeah.
There's so much going on in the subconscious that you don't expect. And sometimes when you talk to someone like a professional, like a therapist, they can eke and draw things out of you, and you go like, oh my God, I didn't realize that. That's what's going on, you know? But if you can't afford that, just speaking to a family member, a friend, just being brave enough to be open and be honest and just say, look, I'm having some problems. And just talking about it. And it's amazing how much better you just feel for talking about it. You know, as a man, you know, Phil, very typical struggle to show emotion sometimes, struggle to talk about things. And I'm trying my hardest just to be totally open, honest, and, you know, just say like, actually, you know, I'm not having a good day. You know, just getting rid of that barrier of the I'm fine. You know, everybody's got the I'm fine. They don't want to talk about it and they'll keep it to
themselves. We're very good at keeping things bottled up, aren't we? You know,
yes, exactly.
Putting on a brave face.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. You know, I've kept things bottled up and bottled up and bottled up until I've had a mental health breakdown. Yeah. And it's not a good way to deal with your problems. You know, I think you have to be open and honest about it. And like you say, it can be harder in the winter months, particularly if it's dark and there's not enough sunlight. And I think at that time of year, it is important to get out and make the most of the day as you can. You know, sometimes the weather's terrible and you know, it's not exactly inspiring to be out, but, and things like nature as well. You know, I have bird feeders in the garden. I love just sitting watching them dart about, you know, you know, whistle between the hawthorn and up and down the cherry tree and then hanging off and feeding. And, you know, it's just finding something that twigs your brain just to give you that little boost of happiness, you know?
Oh, lovely. Thank you for sharing that with us. I myself, I find seeds really help me because I just think of all that kind of hope and optimism that you've got in such a teeny tiny thing that you know that in a few months' time you could be eating something from that you've grown. So I think just even looking at my packets of seeds just kind of helps with my mental health, definitely. Even if they might all get eaten by slugs, it's still good. You know, you still think of spring and summer coming. So thank you for that.
Recently, I noticed that Scotland Grows magazine was saying that the average size of the garden in Scotland is twice the size of an average size garden down in London. And I was just wondering whether you feel that maybe people up in Scotland use their gardens differently?
Well, that's MT O'Donnell. So if MT's listening, she's full of rubbish, so don't listen to her. <what she says. laughs> No. I don't know if it's just simply a case that there is less people and more space in Scotland.
Yeah, a lot more space,
and that's why we've got larger gardens.
Yeah.
In terms of gardening differently in Scotland, that's an interesting question. I wouldn't say, I couldn't make a presumption just based on that fact. I think gardening is a very individual and personal thing. Whereas some people, I can walk past people's gardens and there is somebody in the village who grows only dahlias. You go past and they've got like 100 different dahlias and it looks fantastic for a few months of the year.
Yeah.
And then it's empty the rest of the year. And then you walk past another person's garden and all they grow is rows and rows and rows of potatoes and carrots. And if that's what they want to eat, fair enough. So no, I can't say that just based on that fact alone that there's a particularly different Scottish-English divide in terms of what we grow, other than just you grow what grows. And as I say, the difference in climate is interesting. I mean, even just to give you an example, so I'm up at Beech Grove, which is north of Aberdeen.
Yep.
And if I drive 2 hours down the road, about 100 miles away to Fife, to this place I was first at, Kelly Castle, they are about 3 weeks ahead of me.
Yes.
Right.
And
yeah.
Yeah. So when my sweet peas are just still barely climbing up, they're harvesting theirs. It's amazing what a difference 2 hours up and down the road, 100 miles makes in terms of climate. So there probably would be a big difference between what we could grow up here and what you could grow down there. And that probably does limit us somewhat more in terms of things that will grow. The only thing I think I've ever heard someone from England be jealous of is our Mechanopsis. That's probably
okay.
That's the only thing I've ever heard go,
really?
Oh, damn, I wish I could grow that down with us.
Interesting. Well, I've worked up in garden centres in Scotland, done some workshops and stuff, and we have found that there has been a slower uptake, shall we say, on some of the kind of the peat-free issues, more of the sustainability issues, the pesticides. Would you say you've kind of found that to be an issue? Has it been a slightly slower uptake?
I think in terms of going peat-free, we are in early days at the moment. I especially found doing Beech Grove last year, we are totally peat-free.
Right.
And I found that, you know, we were having to make our own mixes up. So, you know, we couldn't simply just use peat-free because it ran out of steam very quickly.
Right.
And you would end up then spending all your time using liquid feeds, which, if you're buying it in, how much better is it for the environment?
Yeah.
I am an advocate of peat-free. You know, I don't think we should be, you know, destroying peat bogs and all that kind of thing. But in terms of, I think it's very, very inconsistent at the moment. I can literally buy one brand 1 year and get a good quality peat-free alternative, and the next year you can get it and it's absolutely garbage.
Right.
I think that there needs to be a bit more consistency, and even, you know, you don't really expect brands to be the same, but it is amazing, annoyingly, because it's BBC, I can't say I use X, Y, and Z because they're not allowed. But, you know, we used two cheaper brands and they were awful, and then we used the more expensive brand and it was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And even with the more expensive brand, we still ended up having to make our own blend using part peat-free, part riddled compost, part sand, part, you know, Vitax or whatever, in order to make it even doable at all, because you would tend to find you'd pot up a plant, it would be happy for a couple of weeks and then it would just sit and do absolutely nothing. And you'd go like, oh. So then you, like I say, you're feeding it and feeding it and feeding it, and you think, I can see why the good old days liked peat, because you could just stick it in and then leave it and that'd be fine. it was probably a very wonderful substance to grow in.
Yeah.
But we do need to move on from it. I think we need more consistency. We need more testing. And I absolutely understand where within the industry there's a big upheaval, because it's very different from me at home.
Yeah.
Trying to grow a few tomatoes, and if they don't work, oh well. If you've got a professional grower who's relying on, you know, their nursery being successful for themselves and for a number of staff members, and they don't have that consistent media and they are experiencing all sorts of problems and crop failures, you know, that could be them out of business.
Yeah.
And I think that's a completely different ball game to your amateur grower at home. I think by all means, garden centre, go peat free, you know, people at home, you know, we'll get on with it. But I think there needs to be a far more sensible, slow-release thing when it comes to the professional amenity horticulture. Not just amenity, production horticulture, sorry. Yeah, production horticulture really is a very, very volatile and difficult business,
yeah,
I would say.
You know, at the best of times, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, definitely.
You know, I've always been amenity horticulture, not production.
Yeah.
And I've got great respect for anyone in production horticulture because it must be a terrible burden. You know, it must be very high pressure.
Yeah, I would like to see an industry standard set, I think, for peat-free. As you said, it varies so greatly from brand to brand. It would just be really good to know that there is a standard that, you know, these production manufacturers have to reach to in order for it to be sold at all. Because, you know, my worry is it puts people off gardening. And since COVID, so many people took up gardening. Last thing we want to do is lose people because they think it's them, think they can't garden, you know.
You've pretty much said, you've said in about 2-3 sentences what I said in about 10 minutes. So well done. Yeah, we need standards.
Okay, so Scott, I love this one. Have you got a garden gadget or a tool that you just couldn't do without?
Staff, they're great because then they do it for you.
We call them tools.
Yeah, that's it. I always think I'm never without my secateurs. I've got a lovely pair of Okasuni Japanese ones that make the lovely click. Okay, love those. They're great. And, you know, they've got a different release mechanism from the Felcos so that you can do it one-handed. You can just flick it against your side. So even if you're up a ladder, you can just flick it and snip, snip, snip and flick it shut, put it back in your pocket.
That's fancy.
It is. It was about 60 quid, but they're worth it. They're great.
Yeah.
Yeah, they last. Yeah, I've had them for years and years. Yeah. I would say something that I have been switched on to and I'm really enjoying is the sort of Japanese herbaceous sickles, because when it comes to the time of year when you're cutting back things, they speed you up so much more rather than, you know, if you've got a plant and you're click, 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 cutting it back with secateurs, it's repetitive on your wrist and your hand and it takes a while. Whereas if you've got a herbaceous sickle, you just grab it at the top and just and you're done. Seconds.
Where do you get these from? Where can you get these?
You get them from a few places. They are becoming more popular, especially some of the Japanese tools that you can get nowadays. The hori hori, you know, the dig dig, and yeah, all these things. But look into herbaceous sickles. They're like a little tiny handheld sickle that's got a little crook and sort of sharp teeth. But yeah, they like triple your rate of production in the garden when it comes to herbaceous and things like that. It's a fantastic tool. Definitely recommend those. And good ladder. You know, I love henchman ladders.
Henchman
ladder. Yeah, henchman ladder makes all the difference. It's safe, it's lightweight, it's easy to go up and down. I'm not a spokesman for henchman ladder. I just really like them.
But if they're listening.
Yeah, if they're listening, I'll take sponsorship, yeah. But generally, I do a lot of hedge cutting. And having a ladder that is light and easy and safe and you can adjust to slopes and things, it makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah.
And not having to use scaffolding and things like that.
Yeah. So they're an investment, aren't they? But definitely worth it.
Yeah, you're talking £200-300, but again, worth their weight in gold.
Yeah.
So good ladder, good pair of secateurs, and my new favorite little tool is the herbaceous sickle.
Lovely. Oh, thank you for that. So I'm going to ask to finish off, you are a head gardener, you're a horticulturist, so do you have a plant that always brings a smile to your face?
Well, my favorite plant has always been caraway, and caraway is not a particularly popular herb. It's not really well known. It's not something that flowers greatly. I don't like the taste of it. There's not much I like about caraway. But the reason that I love caraway is it started the first conversation with my wife. When I was a student gardener at Pitmedden, she used to work in the tea room, and she came to me on an event night when I was helping out, and she says, I've just been and seen Susan, the head gardener, but she doesn't know what this is. Do you know what it is? And it was caraway. And, you know, I took it and I was sitting studying it and trying to work out the leaves and trying to think, right, okay, what family is it in? And then I just shoved a bit in my mouth and just went, oh, Caroline, yuck. And that was it. And that started our first ever conversation. And, you know, 11 years later, we're married with a son. And so that always has a special place in my heart.
Oh, lovely.
So we've got some in the garden and I wouldn't ever be without
them. Oh, that's really sweet. Thank you for that, Scott. And thank you so much for talking to us today.
Yeah, it's been great. Thank you, Scott.
Yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure. I've really enjoyed it.
Well, that was a great interview with Scott.
Oh, goodness me. It was so honest and open, and he's so knowledgeable as well. And the passion just comes through. But I just love his honesty, his openness about his struggles with mental health, because I know so many gardeners, you know, we go through that. And sometimes there's just not nowhere to talk about it. I think now it is really changing. So it was lovely to hear Scott talk about it. And I also love listening to the differences really between, you know, Scotland and England gardening. Because there is, you know, the weather patterns are very, very different. But he also made me laugh a lot when he talked about Nyphophias. He thinks of David Hasselhoff and Baywatch.
Yes.
That's all I see now when I see a red hot poker. Yeah, so, I mean, we wish him all the best in his
Absolutely.
New career. And, I mean, I'll still be watching Beech Grove. But it's great to hear, because having worked myself behind the scenes on TV gardening shows, it is, you know, it's good to get it out there so people can know a little bit more about what goes on behind the scenes.
It's a good little insight there into the magic of television about actually what happens. You know, the amount of work that goes into producing just a very small segment.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know what that's like, don't you, Phil?
I certainly do.
Thanks, Phil.
All right. Thanks, Kate.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, could I ask a small favour? Please take the time to review the show and share us with your colleagues. It really does make a difference and will help others to find us too. To keep up to date with the latest happening from the underground, sign up to our email newsletter at theunderground.fm. I'm Kate Turner, the Gardener Guru. I'm a horticulturist, garden consultant, and presenter. To find out more, check out my website at gardenerguru.co.uk.
And I'm Phil Wright, the founding partner of Wright O'Barra, a creative marketing agency specializing in the home and garden sectors. And for anyone bringing a new product to market, we've created a handy 7-step guide to help take your product marketing from zero to hero. Find out more at writeobara.com. Thanks for listening.